Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned in to K2OO News in Juneau here on Thursday, the 2nd of August, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with Fumi Matsumoto about her art show opening Friday at the Canvas. Kate Connie from the Juneau Family Health and Birth Center will be here to highlight their pregnancy circles. Rick Trostle from the Juneau Student Symphony will talk about their season. We'll find out about this weekend's Jump Society Film Festival. And Nancy DeTuna will give us the rundown on art happenings in the capital city during Arts Up. At Writer's Almanac Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. But the forecast for tonight looks like rain with low temperatures around 51 degrees. Forecast for Friday, more rain with high temperatures around 58 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Jacqueline Estes, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. 7 U.S. senators are urging the Obama administration to quickly settle up with tribes for unpaid contract costs following a U.S. Supreme Court ruling in the tribes' favor in June. For decades, agencies contracting with tribes to provide services failed to pay the full cost of the contracts, by some estimates leaving the tribes owed some $2 billion. The letter was co-signed by U.S. Senators Lisa Murkowski and Mark Begich of Alaska, James Risch of Idaho, Al Franken of Minnesota, John Tester of Montana, Tom Udall of New Mexico, and Ron Wyden of Oregon. Today, the Association of American Indian Physicians, or AAIP, in partnership with the University of Hawaii Center for Native and Pacific Health Disparities Research, kicked off its annual meeting in Anchorage, Alaska. AAIP Outreach Coordinator Jason McCarty says the two groups will share best practices on the many health issues both face.
We're going to be talking of things like traditional healing, workforce diversity, Native-driven research, models of healthcare delivery, and how we can get communities engaged in intervention projects.
Organizers expect between 300 and 400 participants from across the country. Now, for the fourth in our five-part series on climate change and Alaska Natives, when Johanna Urich visited the Northwest Alaska community of Selawik last spring, the village was grappling with the effects of warming temperatures.
In the village, evidence of melting permafrost is everywhere. Houses have cracks in windows and walls. Doors don't close. And the above-ground Arctic pipes carrying water and sewer are far from level. Selawik, which once stood on firm, mostly frozen ground, is now sinking and eroding.
What makes Selawik different is the effects of warming permafrost are being seen in the infrastructure across the whole community.
Michael Brubaker studied Selawik for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. The freeze-thaw cycles that now dominate Selawik became a crisis this winter when cold temperatures froze the village water system, prompting the governor to declare a state of emergency. That was December 28th. Raven Sheldon, member of the Selawik City Council.
Folks here, yesterday was a big day for them because their water and sewer finally went through. Everybody was doing laundry, cleaning, and they were so happy.
Water and sewer costs $180 a month. The bill comes even when villagers have to cut ice from the river and boil it for water and use honey buckets. In April, city crews were thawing pipes to the last few homes. But City Councilman Raven Sheldon was worried. They need money to fix the problems.
I don't see in the next few years any kind of relief.
Studies indicate that Selawik may be entirely underwater in 50 years. Some, like Elder Bert Christ, want to move to the mountains 17 miles away.
That's the solution. The question is, can we come up with funding to do that? We can deal with the problem here at Selawik to some degree. Question is, how long can we do it?
I'm Johanna Urich.
On On this date in 2009, Nez Perce tribal member Loretta A. Toole received the Margaret Brent Award at the annual American Bar Association in Chicago, Illinois. The award honors women lawyers who have succeeded in their field and served as positive role models and mentors for other women in law. She co-started the first fully Native American-owned law firm in Washington, D.C. with a Native woman co-founder. In addition to being nominated to numerous law boards and committees, Toole was appointed staff director and chief counsel for the Senate Indian Affairs Committee in February 2011 by Senator Daniel Akaka of Hawaii. This is National Native News. I'm Jacqueline Estes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon, where our first guest is Fumi Matsumoto, who's an artist who's got a show opening this Friday at the Canvas. It's called A Bird in the Hand. Amazing art of tea bags, coffee filters, and aluminum dew cans and more. Fumi, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jeff.
So the mixed media show is true in all its regards, isn't it?
Yes, there's quite a few different media prints, and I have some shadow boxes. I've got
Could you describe your haiku shadow boxes? Could you describe those, please?
Yeah, I have a set of four. I don't know if you remember my last show where I had the geisha shadow boxes with little geishas doing fly fishing and things like that. This time I've got four boxes, and they kind of represent different seasons. And in the back they have a reproduction of the famous Japanese printmaker Hiroshige. That's one of my favorites. And it's all kind of a contemplative thing. I put different plants like dried iris from my yard and Christmas cactus, different lilacs, and 100-year-old bamboo that I got from Ed Biarski, and it actually had flowered after 100 years. And so different things, they're little tiny baby crabs that I found on the beach at my dad's house, and they're all kind of juxtaposed in a composition, and I like to call it a haiku shadow box just because it sort of reminds me of a poem, and it's for your own interpretation. There's really no meaning besides, you know, the mood and the atmosphere that they create for the viewer.
I think what that qualifies as mixed media. The show is called A Bird in the Hand. Why birds?
Well, I wouldn't call myself a bird nut. Well, maybe I would. I love
you
birds.
You have a bird.
Yes.
You grew up with them, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I grew up with them. We had parakeets when I was little, and we had a cockatoo here. My son had one, which passed away, and then for Mother's Day, he got me a conure, which is a little tiny parrot from South America, northeastern South America, Brazil, to be exact, and he's really cute and very intelligent. Parrots are one of the smartest birds, including also the corvids, which are, ravens and crows and jays. And so they and the parrot family are really bright. Like Pogo's figured out how to open the cage and get out himself and then go back in at night. He can actually open the cage by lifting it up with his foot and sticking his head through there. So,
and a very vocal bird?
Oh, man, he screams like a banshee. If anybody wants to get a conure, I would think twice if you're sensitive to noise. But they're great little birds.
What kind of birds are in the show?
I've got so many different kinds of birds. Just list a few. Cormorants, gulls, chickadees, hummingbirds, blackbirds, flamingos, parakeets, jays, ravens, crows, herons, eagles, owls, parrots. Cockatoo, mergansers, terns, woodpecker, rooster, and the blue-footed booby from Galapagos Island.
You also use a technique called kirigami. Could you describe that and how you use it?
Yeah, kirigami actually people confuse that sometimes with origami. Kirigami, kiri means to cut, and gami is paper in Japanese, whereas origami is folding paper. And in the traditional origami, you're not supposed to use scissors or cut. They just do it by folding. But kirigami, you can actually fold the paper and then cut it to make designs. Like you might remember in grade school, you made snowflakes by folding and then you cut a pattern out. Well, I discovered that these coffee filters that I'd used for my coffee filter kimono back in the last art show I had last August, the filters were so neat, I decided to dye some more and get different color variations of the filters, and I fold them in half, and then I fold them again into thirds and make a design so that when that is cut and opened up, you have, it's a hexagonal design, six images. So I have six birds that come out after I unfold it. I use X-Acto knife and small scissors for the details to cut them out. And the cutting part is not that difficult. What's hard is trying to figure out, you know, how to make the design fit into that small one-sixth, and you never know how it turns out when you open it up. But I was quite pleased with the results, and the colors are fantastic, I think. I use silk dyes, the same kind that I use for my scarves, and I do have a few bird scarves there in the show in the window. But after you dye, I dye each coffee filter individually, and then I try to select the colors that will match the bird, or actually select a bird that will match the colors. And then I fold it and draw the design lightly in pencil. And traditional kirigami, I think if you're purist, you're not supposed to use pencil. But I do use a pencil to draw the sketch out the design, and I cut it. Takes a little bit of time to cut the design, but then when I open it up, I'm always amazed. It looks like a kaleidoscope of color, almost like a Rorschach, blotch, but from a distance, it just looks almost like a 1960s tie-dye or something. But when you come up close, you can see the details and you realize, oh, wow, you know, that's an eagle or that's a heron. It's kind of, we just put the gallery up. I mean, we just hung the gallery, and thanks to Chris Taylor, who's the gallery manager, just finished putting it up, and the colors are pretty fantastic. It contrasts quite a bit with my teabag block prints, which are all almost monochromatic. They're black designs stamped onto teabags of different sorts. I've got Earl Grey teabags, got green tea teabags, different kinds of teabags. So the paper is actually a sheet of glued tea bags, and those are all in browns and light colors, but I like the way that it contrasts with the kirigami, which are really, really pretty brilliant colors.
Yeah, block prints, and it's not just one block or two blocks, it's several blocks?
Oh, yeah, I cut for each image that's on there. For instance, the merganser, that's a duck, for those of you who aren't familiar with mergansers, I cut the little baby chicks, and then I cut two parents out. And I use them as multiples. I just eat for each baby merganser, it's one stamp. And I ink it, and I stamp it, and then position it again, ink it, and stamp it. So the merganser has 20 babies, so I've put 20 stamps on there, and then the two parents. So it's 22, actually, it's not one block. It's like 22 stampings. So it takes quite a lot of time, you know, to position it. And you can't get exactly the same image or the print. Someone asked me from a gallery, well, what's your edition? Well, I call them all artist proofs, because each individual print is done separately by hand, and the tea bag don't all look the same. You can't get the stains on the tea bags to look exactly the same. So each print is an individual item and quite unique, I think. I don't know of anyone else who makes block prints on tea bags. I'd like to know if anyone does.
I'm not sure if anybody makes teabag kimonos like you made.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I really like the way that the paper, you know, looks almost like leather or gut or some kind of natural material. But, you know, coffee filters and recycling those teabags is great. And I have friends collecting them for me now. Thank you. Because I can only drink so much tea.
And Mountain Dew cans?
Oh, the Mountain Dew cans. Well, my son's a fan of Mountain Dew, and I said, oh, these are pretty neat. You know, save them for me. So I took them, and I got some kitchen shears, like Joyce Chen kitchen shears, and started cutting them flat. And I drew a pattern of parrots and then traced them onto the aluminum can, and I cut them out and fold the cans and hammer them with little hammers to get the shape of the head. And I got the little eye to be part of the design of the Mountain Dew. So you've got green and red and white parrots flying, you know, all together in a formation. It almost looks like the Blue Angels or something, but they're in a frame, and they're all made out of recycled Mountain Dew soda cans.
And they're cute, too.
Yeah, they're cute.
I've been talking to Fumi Matsumoto, who's got a show called A Bird in the Hand, opening Friday at the Canvas. What time does it open up?
4:30 to 7 is the opening, and, you know, we'll have, I'll be there and to answer any questions, and we'd love to see you come down.
And Fumi, thank you very much for being on the show with us today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly. Blackbird fly. To the line of a dark black night. Blackbird fly. Blackbird fly. Into the light of a dark black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to arise. You are only waiting for this moment to arise. You are only waiting for this moment to arise.
Time is 3:18 and you are tuned in to KTUO News and Juno here on a Juno Afternoon. Our next guest is Kay Connie from the Juno Family Health and Birth Center here to talk about pregnancy circles. Kay, thank you very much for being on the show with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, tell me about the Juno Family Health and Birth Center.
Well, the Juno Family Health and Birth Center is more than just a birth center anymore. We have health care and family support programs, a lot of different parenting classes and education programs for families. And then, of course, we do have the midwifery clinic and birth center.
And what is a pregnancy circle?
The Pregnancy Circle is a new program that we're just starting. It's another form of pregnancy education in a more informal setting, hopefully a setting that will give rise to discussion of whatever the participants want to discuss that day, and also help create community by, you know, pregnant women and couples getting to know each other and meeting on a weekly basis to talk about different issues surrounding pregnancy.
So it's for men and women?
It's for a pregnant woman and her partner, whoever her partner is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you had a meeting last night, what went on at the last night's meeting?
Well, we're just starting, so we don't have a lot of participants yet. So I'm hoping to just get the word out that, it's happening. It's Wednesdays from 11:45 to 1, so it's in the middle of the day over lunch, and we do provide a really healthy, light lunch. Hopefully that will bring people in.
Is there a maximum number that you're going to feel is a perfect number?
Well, I'm hoping that we don't exceed the capacity of the room that we're going to be meeting in, so hopefully no more than 25 participants, but I would imagine that we'll start out smaller than that in the beginning, and we'll just see how it grows.
What do you think are the benefits?
I think the benefits are creating community with other pregnant women and their families, and then education. You know, I think education is really important to me, pregnancy and childbirth education. I was a childbirth educator before I even became a midwife, and I just love teaching classes. It's really hard to get pregnant women and their partners to come to evening classes, except for childbirth classes, which are an ingrained part of our culture. But for nutrition classes and pregnancy classes, it's a little bit harder to get out the door, I think, in the evenings when you're pregnant. So we're trying this lunchtime format just to see if we can bring more people in if we do it in the middle of the day and provide food.
What are some of the obvious and maybe not so obvious lessons that people have to share?
Well, I think it's really important to us, at least, to talk about nutrition, healthy nutrition, healthy lifestyle choices, different aspects of prenatal care, and, you know, all the changes that happen to women during pregnancy. I think that's important to be able to have educated discussions about that, but also to be able to share that with other pregnant women. You know, what are you going through? Oh, yeah, I had that same thing happen to me. You know, I think that's a good bonding time.
What do men need to know other than everything?
Men need to know that they need to be very supportive of their partners during this time, because women really need that support from their partner to get as involved as they can in the pregnancy and the birth process, because the more involved they get, the more they're going to enjoy it.
I've been talking with Kay Connie about the Juno Family Health and Birth Center Pregnancy Circles, which are meeting on Wednesdays at noon, you say?
Wednesdays from 11:45 to 1. So basically, yeah, 12 to 1 over the lunch hour.
Could you describe where the birth center is, please?
The birth center is at 1601 Salmon Creek Lane. And this class is in the upstairs classroom in the birth center. And if you need to, you can give me a call. My direct line at the birth center is 796-2450, and I welcome any calls or questions about the pregnancy circle.
Do you have a website?
JunoBirthCenter.org.
Okay, Connie, anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Just thanks for having me down. I really appreciate you calling me and inviting me to come.
from the soundtrack of Dumbo from Walt Disney Productions. You are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. The time is 3:24. Our next guest in the studio is Rick Trostel from the Juneau Student Symphony here with the details about this year's season.
Hi, Jeff.
Rick, how's it going?
Thank you for having me. It's going well.
So you took the summer off, it seems like.
Never completely off. There's always projects going.
Your latest project is a series of symphony concerts?
We have four concerts coming up this year. Our Pops concert is coming up on the 17th, and we're doing Latin music. You could also look at it as Spanish music from the New World and the Old. And one of the reasons I'm in here today is to let you know that the best place to hear the orchestra is from within. And if you're interested in playing, it's not too late to give me a call and join the orchestra if you happen to play any of the orchestral instruments, including saxophone, stringed instruments, percussion instruments, woodwind instruments, brass instruments. If you play any of those and want to give it a try, I'd love to have you come play with us.
How much experience is necessary?
Well, I'll leave that up for you to judge. You could say most middle school musicians are ready to play at one point, especially if they want to work hard on the music. If you go to our website at junosymphony.org/student-symphony, there are excerpts that are on the website, so you can check out the music and see if that's playable. And if it is, I certainly want you to give me a call, and I can be reached at 723-3564, or from the website, you can get that telephone number, and you can get my email address as well.
Want to describe the series of concerts you have?
Well, this first concert will be, like I say, Latin Pops on the 17th at noon at the State Office Building and at 7 at Jack Gordon Youth Center. And then we take a short break, a couple of weeks, and then we get ready for our first rehearsal for the fall concert, which starts in mid-September. And the concert is the first weekend in November. And that concert will feature each section of the orchestra. The woodwind section will have its own piece, the percussion section has its own piece, etc., as well as a great opening and closing number, which will feature the entire orchestra. Then we take another break over all the holidays, and we get back to rehearsing in January for our winter concert, which will be From the Stars. We'll be opening with Also Sprach Zarathustra, or you can pronounce that maybe better than I can.
2001 A Space Odyssey is my name.
Yeah, and Blue Danube, which was also played in 2001 Space Odyssey. And we're going to feature young violinists playing the Twinkle Variations from the Suzuki book in an arrangement that includes full orchestra and young Suzuki players. So that should be a fun concert.
Does the Juneau Student Symphony have a motto or a mission statement?
Our mission statement is to provide a platform for musicians of every age to play full orchestra settings. We try to make art as we go along, and I think we do. We're a performance art group. But in a nutshell, we're a youth symphony with no upper age limit, or we're a community orchestra that has lots of youth in it as well as adults.
About how many members do you have?
Our orchestras range between 40 and 50 members, so it's a big animal, lots of people.
All right, and for your first concert is not this weekend, but the 16th and 17th. It's the 17th.
The first concert is the 17th, and we do two concerts that day: noon at the State Office Building on August 17th, and 7 o'clock at the Zach Gordon Youth Center.
Rick Trostel, you want to pass along your contact information again?
Yeah, best way to get a hold of me is to go to our website. That's junosymphony.org, and that's enough. That'll get you there. But if you want to put the slash and add student symphony to that, that'll get you all kinds of information, including schedules and contact information.
All right, thanks, Rick Trostel, for coming in. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Oh, Jeff, I just appreciate all that you do, and I want to just thank you for this opportunity.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 2nd of August, 2012. It's the anniversary of the first U.S. Census on this day, 1790. U.S. was the first country in the world to make a census mandatory in the Constitution. It needs to be held every 10 years, and it serves as the basis for congressional districting and for electoral votes. In 1790, only the names of the heads of households were recorded, and the number of free white males was counted for draft purposes. Women not allowed to work as census takers, and they were rarely named in the census. Slaves were only counted as 3/5 of a person, Indians not counted at all. So it wasn't really accurate, but the first census recorded just under 4 million people residing in this country. In 2010, almost 310 million residents. It's the birthday of the journalist James Fallows, Philadelphia, 1949, who's written for more than 25 years for The Atlantic magazine, reporting on the economy, on technology, on war and national security. Majored in history and literature at Harvard, he was a speechwriter for Jimmy Carter when he was only 26. He's written a lot about Iraq, articles collected in his book Blind into Baghdad. His most recent book is Postcards from Tomorrow Square, Reports from China. James Fallows, who said, "Make the important interesting." It's the birthday of James Baldwin, the writer, Harlem, 1924, grew up poor, oldest of 9 children, worked in sweatshops as a teen, became interested in reading, hung out at the public library. He said, "You think your pain and your heartbreak are unprecedented in the history of the world, but then you read. It was books that taught me that the things that tormented me most were the very things that connected me with all the people who had ever been alive." He was a Pentecostal preacher at the age of 16, later moved to Greenwich Village, started to come to terms with his homosexuality, was encouraged by the novelist Richard Wright to move to Paris and later to Switzerland, where he finished his first novel, an autobiographical novel about growing up in Harlem, Go Tell It on the Mountain, came out in 1953. Came back to this country to be involved in the civil rights movement, was devastated by the assassinations of Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King Jr., and returned to France in the 70s, where he wrote 2 more novels and a final collection of poetry, Jimmy's Blues. James Baldwin has said, "You write in order to change the world, knowing perfectly well that you probably can't, but also knowing that literature is indispensable to the world. The world changes according to the way people see it. And if you alter even but a millimeter the way people look at reality, then you can change it." Here's a poem for today by Ramon Montaigne, On the Beach. Children playing on the beach, mad dogs running off the leash, babies eating small mud pies, poison puddles in disguise, surfers paddling out to sea, are there sharks? There well might be. Children walking to and fro, are they wearing sunscreen? No. Men who go without long pants or shirts are asking for skin cancer. Naked women soon will be sent to chemotherapy. Food left sitting in the sun, salmonella has begun. Young girls talking to strange men who yesterday were in the pen. The days get hotter near the water here in Sodom. Thank God for autumn. A poem by Ramon Montaigne, On the Beach, used by permission of the poet here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vedder. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
time is 3:35, and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon, where our next guests are Pat Reyes and Lou Logan from Lucid Driver here to talk about tonight's and this weekend's Jump Society Film Festival. Thank you very much for coming down to the station, Pat and Lou.
Thanks, Jeff.
So this is your 10th anniversary.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I mean, not you two together, but Lucid Driver is in the Jump Film Festival.
Yeah, no, oh, yeah. I think it's... No, I think Lou and I have been together for 12 years.
So how did the Jump Society start?
How did it start?
Actually, before we get to that, how would you describe the Jump Society Film Festival?
Oh, it's a collection of locally made short films, and we do screenings twice a year, and it's just sort of a chance for people in town that are interested in filmmaking to get together and share their movies on the big screen.
How did it start?
It started in Fairbanks. Actually, Lou and I went to school up in Fairbanks. Aaron did also.
Back in the aughts.
Yeah, back around
in the early
the
aughts.
Turn of the century. Yeah, and we made a lot of short films up there, and we did some film festivals, and Lou started the UAF Film Club, and we really enjoyed doing that. And when we moved to Juneau, we thought it would be fun to have a similar event here, and so we started the Jump Society. And we weren't really sure how well it would go over. And I went in and pitched it to the Arts and Humanities Council, and they kind of laughed at me, but they gave me $50 to start it, and it worked out okay.
JUMP stands for?
The Juneau Underground Motion Picture Society.
How many films did you start out with in your first year?
I don't know. We've been pretty steady since the beginning. We get about 20 to 25, I'd say, per festival, and we do it twice a year, so we're probably... well past the 400 mark would be my guess.
How many times do you have to say no to somebody, and how do you do it?
It's not very fun in a small town, but we do have a limited screening time. This festival, we got about 2 hours worth of submissions, and we have about a little over an hour and a half, about an hour 40 minutes of screen time. So we had to cut about 20 minutes worth of film. Some of the films we're able to ask people to shorten up, like if they're long and they seem like there's a way to condense them, then that helps. Some films we just have to, reject, and we ask that people can re-edit them and resubmit them, but it's a tough decision to make.
And sometimes people submit more than one, so we sometimes choose one of the two that they submitted to reject.
Yeah, we try to err on the side of inclusion.
Yeah, we want everybody to be able to show something, but unfortunately we can't always.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the things we've started to do is we're starting to take less like Kickstarter pitch videos and things like that, like trailers and like advertisement type videos. We get a lot of things from various programs. Like there's a video in there from the radio station, and it's more about a project than about the radio station. But if it was just like an ad for K2, then we'd have to probably say no because of space constraints.
It's about KFLO?
It's about Glitters.
Glitters are
you familiar with the Glitters Project?
Sure.
Yeah, Andy and Lou edited together a video about the Glitters Project. It was fun. It showed a lot of neat time-lapse footage in it, so it definitely had some artistic merit.
How many films are in this year's version?
I think we're just over 20. Yeah, I think it's, let's see, I could count them up. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10.
It's like 19.
Yeah, about 19.
You want to discuss some of the films?
There's a lot of really bright stuff. There's three or four music videos, and there's a lot of really happy, sunshiny footage, which is kind of interesting. I like the film festival as like a snapshot of the community, so it's neat to see what people are thinking about on the whole. Are there any films that jumped out at you, Lou?
I actually didn't get to watch them yet.
Oh, you didn't? Okay, yeah, so I've seen a bunch of these. There's a lot of really good, like, outdoors footage. There's the music videos are a lot of fun. There's a music video by George and Bridget Kuhar. There's a music video by Hannah Adina. Marianne Call has a music video in here that I stayed up all night last night editing, so that's done. Yeah, it's great. It's a good festival. I'm really happy with it this year.
Just give me some hints about some others.
Okay, so there's if you're familiar with The Luminous Pariah, there was a film that was submitted in the Winter Festival, and I think it was like 2010 or 2011, and we had two entries from Mukia that year, and so we set that one aside, and we were able to put it into this festival, which is, it's kind of a fun fishing strip show movie for the family. we do get some adult content, and we try and put that towards the end of the festival, so that if you're there with kids, you can duck out before the last three or four films and still really enjoy the festival.
And Greg Chaney's continuing his streak of providing a movie for each of the festivals. He's got another one in here. And there's rumors of one of them. Someone said it's making fun of me, but I didn't watch it yet.
Yeah, there's a really fun...
like Corin, he's Scandi, so...
There's a really fun movie that kind of...
I don't know what it's about.
Jump Society as like a 10th anniversary thing. It's great. I enjoyed it.
Give it like a litmus test to see if he makes you laugh or something?
Yeah, it was kind of a last-minute thing. They're making fun of themselves. They're making fun of us. They're making fun of the whole process, and it's really enjoyable. If you've been to a few of the festivals, I think there's a lot of jokes in there that you'll like.
I'm talking to Lou Logan and Pat Race from Lucid Reverie about the Jump Society Film Festival, which starts tonight at the Golden Nickelodeon Theater. Want to talk about the other locations?
Actually, we're just screening at the Gold Town. We're screening tonight at 7, and then we'll be screening Friday and Saturday at 7 and 9, and we're going to do a Sunday matinee at 4 p.m.
How can people get tickets?
And people can pick up tickets at the Alaska Robotics Gallery, which is at 220 Front Street. And they are free, but we do sell out of shows. The show tonight is already sold out. And so you'll need to grab your tickets to kind of reserve a seat.
And that's the store right to the left of Gross Alaska.
And that's where you moved.
Yeah, our gallery moved across the street there. We were kind of hidden before when we were in the Emporium. So now we've got a nice storefront on the street, and it's been a lot of fun to have the new location.
After all these years of doing the Jump Society Film Festival, what's the lesson you've learned?
Well, I've learned a lot of lessons. I mean, I've learned about programming, like how to put the films in a particular order so that they're more enjoyable.
How do you do that?
It's kind of like making a mixtape. If you've ever made a mixtape for someone that you care about, it's a little bit like that. You have to alternate, you know, the fast songs with the slow songs, and you have to sort of sometimes clump them by theme or sometimes break them up because they're too similar. And it's very similar to making a mixtape.
Over the past 10 years, do you have a favorite that you remember?
A favorite film?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have a lot of favorite films. There's been, I really liked, there was one that Arlo Midget and Mike Moss made in, I think it was 2004 or 2005, but it was, we'd just done a big, like, best of the film festival collection, and it was, like, the best of, like, the four shows that we'd done at that point, and, which was a huge mistake, because there's no way to really say which ones are the best, and it was the only time we had ever, like, parsed things competitively, and they did just a brilliant scathing comedy about the best of the festival, and they did all these mini parodies of each of the films that was featured, and I think that one was one of my favorites. I really like it when the film festival is self-referential, and that's probably what I like about Corin's film this time around.
And you also have a DVD available?
We have our own films are available on DVD at the gallery, at the Alaska Robotics Gallery. We've got several years worth of short films, like 60 some odd films on a couple DVDs, and then there's a lot of other films that we carry too. We have Greg Chaney's movie, we have Lyle Hebert's Gold Town, we have some local music over there. So yeah, it's a great spot to come pick up work by local artists.
And it's located again where, Lou?
Right next to the theater downtown, Gross Alaska Theater, right to the left, 220 Front Street. Or right next to the Viking bar, if you prefer that.
Once. Better know you want to go over the show dates and times again, please?
Yeah, the Jump Society Film Festival is screening at the Gold Town Nickelodeon tonight at 7 p.m., and then Friday and Saturday at 7 and 9, and Sunday at 4 p.m. And you can pick up tickets at the Alaska Robotics Gallery at 220 Front Street.
Thanks for going by. Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask?
More information at jumpsociety.org, or you can call that store that Pat mentioned at 523-0303. And last thing I wanted to mention is that we will have free Jump Society stickers at the Jump Show.
Oh, cool. Yay, stickers.
All right, thanks for coming by.
All right, thanks for having us.
Today's program is brought to you by the Silver Bow Bakery, now selling its signature products at Super Bear, including hummus, flavored cream cheese, flatbreads, energy crisps, and bagel chips, as well as ready-to-bake cookie dough. The Silver Bow Bakery, now available at Super Bear.
Summer and fall are great times to get out and enjoy the wilds of Alaska. But when a bear comes into your camp, nature is getting just a little too close. Always keep safety in mind and help keep bears out of your camp by storing food in bear-resistant containers or hanging it in a tree. Pack out all garbage and food when you leave. Burning it leaves behind smells that attract bears. Keep bears wild by never teaching them that hunters and anglers provide an easy meal. This message sponsored by Alaska's Bear Committees.
Time is 3:49 and you are tuned in to KTLO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest is Nancy Duterney from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council here with news about local things going on in the art world. Nancy, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me. Well, it's First Friday. Yahoo! We have a lot of things going on. Tonight, of course, there's the thrilling KTOO Board of Directors meeting downstairs in the conference room. You're not going to miss that, right? Yes.
It must do. Must be.
But what's really exciting is the Jump, the 10th years of Jump. Juno Underground Movie Project? I guess that's what it's
Juno
called.
Juno Underground Motion Picture Society.
Ah, see there, I knew I was going to get it wrong. Anyway, it's their 10th year, and they're having their film festival. It starts on this evening at 7 o'clock. Tickets are, as always, free to this, but you need to get tickets in order to have a seat. Their showings are at Goldtown. You get the tickets at Alaska Robotics.
It's sold out for tonight.
Sold out. Well, see how it is. You'll just have to stand in line. But you do have Friday at 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturday at 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. So don't lose faith. Anyway, let's see. Friday, as I mentioned, is First Friday. We have 17 different places that I'm aware of that you can go. So if you pace yourself, you figure you've got an hour and a half, you know how long you can spend in each one. Start out at the Jack. We have Arnie Weimer and a Skagway artist, Eve Griffin. I'm hanging stuff up over there right now, and then you can pick up your little map so you know where to go. The Alaska State Museum continues its showing of Dan Drew's History of Alaska, and also When Over There Was Over Here. And at 6 o'clock, Alexander Dulitsky will be offering an illustrated lecture on Alaska at War's discussion of World War II. The Silver Bow Bakery back room has Michelle Goad and Corey Akagi. And let's see, they're open until 8. The canvas is showing a bird in the hand. You were just talking to Fumi, I think?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, so that's it. And also, they have Pie in the Sky open, so if you get a little peckish along the way.
Bird in the hand, a pie in the sky.
Yeah, see, there you go. All right. Pie in the Sky, I need to write that down. Heritage 2nd Street has Sitting Around on the Ground with a Fairbanks artist, Holly Lena Winkleman. They're on 2nd Street. The Rookery is showing large photographs by Toby Harbinick. They're continuing on down Seward Street. Turn the corner, go over to Annie Kale's. Karen Beeson and basket weaver Sharon Fieldyaw, I think is her name, are on exhibit there. Kaiton across the street from Annie Kale's has Tools by Rachel Duesler. She always makes the most interesting things. Then you walk around to the Paradise Lunch area. There's Misty Ostrowski and Sarah Arnson are showing in Adorn. It's behind the Paradise Lunch. And upstairs in the Franklin Street, I'm forgetting the name of it, the Alaska Laundry Building, the Rainforest Yoga is offering a yoga tasting with beginning lessons by Tammy Davis.
It's the Emporium Mall.
It's the Emporium Mall. Thank you.
I'm here to help.
Thank you. Some of us need all the help we can get. Downstairs from that in the Emporia Mall in the Heritage Coffee is Allie High. Across the street over in the Senate Building, we have in the Juno Artist Gallery, Nell McConaughey of Spiral Studios, and in Figment, Seeing Red by Christiana Carrillo, and they are celebrating their first year in business. They opened a year ago on First Friday. Gallery of the North has Kathleen Wiest. She's used to teach here and now lives over in Tenneke, and she's doing acrylics. In the Little Pocket Park in Akaday Park, we have a special show by Ariel Rolfe called Fecal Matters, all about dog poop. Okay, then. I'll leave it right there.
You can say it on the radio, but I can't.
You were going to do what? Aunt Claudia's Doll Museum is open 2 to 7 on Friday and noon to 5 on Saturday. They are upstairs from Cuts Online in Suites 102, 103, and 105. And Mary Ellen Frank will be there with her studio open. It's a fascinating museum. If you've never been up there, check it out. Going up this street to the Franklin Street Gallery, Water States. 15 different artists examine different things about water. Icebergs and rain and various other things. And the Baranoff will have a little wine tasting there for a small fee, so it makes a pleasant walk about. At 5:30, we have concerts in the park, down at the Marine Park, unless it's even vaguely drippy. Among the performers Friday night is the Juno Cello Choir, and they cannot handle the rain, so I'm suspecting that concerts in the park will be at the Jack. It starts out with Nearly Normal Alaskan, then it's the Juno Cello Choir, and then Elton. And Elton performed at the Sunday Market last Sunday. They're wonderful, and I think the rest of the group will be too. So 5:30 to 7, we have concerts in the park. Up on the tram, Tom Loker in the Timberline Bar and Grill. 6:30, Stars of Summer, Come Cruise with Us. It's a dinner honoring visitor industry workers, and it's Centennial Hall. Tickets are $25. You can get them at the Baranoff and other locations around town. Not at the Jack, though. At 7 p.m., Dan Hobson is doing his classical guitar thing in the Gold Room. At 7 and 9, as I mentioned, the Jump Society Festival, and you better go get your tickets now since tonight is already gone. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't say sold out because you don't buy them, right? They're free, but you better get them.
Whatever works.
Whatever works, yeah. Maybe if you offered them money, you could. Anyway, 7:30, the start of the star performances, the Perseverance Kids performances. Pirates of Penzance Jr. is at 7:30 in the Noyos Pavilion out at the UAS campus. You can buy a pass for $25 to see all the different performances, or it's $10 for adults and $5 for kids for each of the individual ones. You have 2 weekends to sort of squeeze all these in. They have various permutations of Friday evenings and afternoons and all sorts of things. But Pirates of the Penzance kicks it off. 9 p.m., there's a comedy show at Zen. Danator returns, they say. 9:30, it's sit-in with the band at the Rendezvous Bar with Jason Caputo. Saturday morning, 9 a.m., out at the University Glacier View Room, it is the iPad Users Group, and I believe Flip Nicklin may be talking about whale pictures. I'm not sure I have the right sequence of the programs. You can get that information by emailing info@alaskaipad.org. At 2 p.m., it's Romeo and Juliet, the star performance in the Noyos Pavilion. It's a Perseverance thing again. It is at 6 p.m., Saturday Night Swing in the Canvas. Lessons are from 6 until 8 and open dance from 8 until 9. This is $5 at the door. You can get more information by calling 209-4837. Again, you have the Jump Festival from 7 to 9 on Saturday. And at 7:30, it is Baylor at the Back of a Boat. It is the play written by Ishmael Hope for the Star Productions of Perseverance Theater out on the Auk Lake campus in the Noyos Pavilion. So Sunday, we have Sunday Market from noon to 4-ish. We've been having produce. I suspect that Big Mike's Barbecue will be back. There's music. I think we've can't remember who we're having. Oh, Musical Moments at the Market, classical flute and guitar. They're wonderful. So come on down sometime during the day. It's supposed to be sunny, so do come out. Noon to 1:30 and 2 to 3:30, it's Rotary Day at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center. It's free. Come on out for those. At 4 o'clock, you can again see the Jump Music Festival or the film festivals. 6 p.m., International Folk Dancing at JRC Downtown. I have a listing on our calendar for the Hillbillies Honeys being at the Sunday in the Marine Park on Sunday at 7:30, but I don't trust my work on this one. At Monday at 6 p.m., Heather Barr, who used to live in Juneau and now works for the Human Rights Watch, is going to be speaking on Afghanistan at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall. You can get more information about this at 789-9229. It's free. Tuesday at 7 p.m., there's a block party on Cassian Drive put out by the First Church of God. There'll be fire trucks and hot dogs, and they invite you to bring a dessert to share. Wednesday, Romeo and Juliet. Thursday is Baylor at the Back of the Boat, and that gets us through the week.
Nancy DeChuna, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Of Dan Hobson behind us now. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201AM 88.1. K220BT serves Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210AS 89.9. Also online at www.ktoo.org. And the weather forecast for tonight looks like more rain with low temperatures around 50 degrees, southeast winds to 15 miles per hour. Forecast for Friday, more rain with high temperatures around 58 degrees. Saturday, partly cloudy skies with high temperatures around 66 degrees. Sunday, more rain with high temperatures around 58 degrees. Thank you for tuning in to June Afternoon. Pat Moore will be your guest host tomorrow. Thank you. Coming up next is All Things Considered.
They really feel like they're winning this battle.
The battle for Syria's largest city continues, with the rebels arming themselves for the long haul. It's Thursday, August 2nd, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.